Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to a special makeup edition of WrestleChat's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing Monday Night Raw from this week, which was a very, very unusual Monday Night Raw, and probably a Monday Night Raw different than all the others as far as fan reaction is concerned. Usually when we do these shows, the next day I scour the internet and I look for fan reaction because, after all, we want to know what you guys thought. And, of course, we're going to give you our own personal opinion, but I also want to know what the majority of fans thought. And this was a very split show. And there was really nobody who said, yeah, it was okay. There were people on both sides of this fence. There were people on the, this is a disaster and the WWE is finished fence. And then there were people saying, marked improvement. I loved certain aspects of this show. I think that AEW coming into fruition is helping the WWE to find their way. It's very interesting. There didn't seem to be much middle ground. So before we start this, let's just make sure, of course, that Blog Talk is functioning well. And Todd, can you hear me this afternoon?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Well, well, what do you know? Anyway, folks, let's start with the basics. There were people who really, really, really hated this revamped Brock Lesnar, who comes out with a Money in the Bank briefcase that's now painted up to look like a boombox and holds it to his ear while he's bouncing back and forth to imaginary music, or they're pumping some music into the arena or whatever they're doing. You can mark me among those people. This is not the best use for Brock Lesnar, in my opinion. Now, was Brock Lesnar due for a little personality upgrade or a little bit of whatever? Yeah, of course. Is he due for, you know, looking like he's actually having fun in pro wrestling and not just, you know, Mike Taxi's double parked, let's hurry up and get this over with? Yes, of course. But I want people to understand something. There is no reason for a guy like Brock Lesnar to add any comedic anything to his character, in my opinion. And also, I want people to understand that the WWE oftentimes runs a risk. Now, I'm not easily offended by things, and I don't look for things to be offended by, and I'm not one of those people who scans every television show saying, oh, that could be considered this or that could be considered that, because I have a life. If I don't like what I'm seeing, I'll shut the damn thing off. But I understand that the WWE is a publicly traded company and they're very PC and they are always looking out for what would, you know, what would our sponsors think? What would the shareholders think? What would certain fans think? We have to be very sensitive to their whatever. Well, it's not being very sensitive to have Brock Lesnar come out with a briefcase looking like a boombox. Number one, when's the last time people used a boombox? When's the last time you saw somebody bouncing up and down the street with a boombox glued to their ear? And what normally does that represent? If Seth Rollins was not in that ring, you could actually make a case that he was mocking Kofi Kingston. It's just not a good aesthetic. I just don't like the way it looks. And it doesn't even suit Brock Lesnar anyway. And to do it twice. So you have Kofi come out and he basically says, I want Brock Lesnar, which is great. But then Seth Rollins comes out and says he also wants Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar comes out, and because they won't just stand there while he dances the boombox, they say, oh, well, we're not going to make a decision right now. We'll make a decision later, and they storm out. This, again, is like bait and switch. You know, you're telling the fans, tune in because there's going to be a decision made, and then you say, no, we were kidding. Now we're just going to give you Brock Lesnar dancing to a boombox while he grins like a, you know, gorilla with gas. And I just don't think that that's a great way to open up a show, Mike.
No, it isn't. I was one of the ones back in the 80s that used to do that. You know, I used to have a bunch of tapes, and I used to go down the road, and I used to, you know, have the thing up to my ear and walk down the road with it, you know. That's what I used to do, you know, while singing. But that was 40 years ago. That was in the 80s, maybe early 90s, I don't know. So, yeah, it's a little bit – it's not only making fun of Kobe, but it's a little bit played, you know.
It's very dated. It's very dated. There's got to be some kids in that audience saying, I don't get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. And it doesn't – I mean, I'm all for giving the briefcase to somebody like Brock Lesnar, you know. That's a good idea. He's a heel. It's a heel thing. You know, you don't want to see it every week, but – you want to see it, and he's the perfect guy because he's not going to be there. The way I understand his contract is he's supposed to be there just about every week, but knowing Brock Lesnar, he's not going to be. So, like I said, it's a good idea to give it to him. Just can you find another way to? I mean, I would rather see Heyman carrying it than Brock.
Yeah, I know. Look, this is – I'm not sure I'm good with Brock Lesnar having it the way he won it. If he won it flat out, then I would say, okay, well, whatever. If he was in the match and he won it, the way he won it was kind of an insult to the fans. It was an insult to everybody that was in that match because they all busted their ass and Lesnar did nothing and he won. He won a match he wasn't even in. Pretty freaking stupid. But now that he does have it, that's certainly a huge threat. But what I don't like, and maybe I'm in the minority here, but what I honestly don't like is I do not like these champions coming out begging him, tell us who you're going to cash it in. Tell us who you're going to cash it in. Because what it looks like to your average fan is these guys are deathly afraid of Brock Lesnar. They know he has the briefcase. They know he can cash it in any time. They're trying to goad him into saying when and where so they can prepare because they know they couldn't possibly hope to beat him if he cashes in spontaneously. And these are good guys. These are faces. And it's almost making them look like scaredy cats. It really is. It's almost making them look like, oh, my God, Brock has the briefcase. He could cash it in spontaneously anytime. We'll lose. We have to get them to solidify it and tell us when and where so we can prepare. I don't like the look of that. I'd rather have Kofi Kingston come out and say, Brock, anytime, anywhere, any place you decide to cash that in, I can only hope it's against me. Because regardless of what condition I'm in when you do it, beating you will solidify me as one of the top champions of all time. Seth Rollins could say the same thing and say, I've done it. I've cashed in at the weakest times. And it wasn't a very satisfying championship run, Brock, so you might want to think about it before you do it. But I don't imagine you care much. I didn't care much back then either. But I can promise you I'm ready. Every single time I go out to the ring, I'm ready for you. You're never going to catch me unaware because I'm ready every single time. Then it makes them look like the heroes they're supposed to be. When they're running around, Todd, saying, come on, tell us when you're going to cash it in. Come on, please tell us. It looks like they're scared of them.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, by the looks of it, they look like they were scared of Brock Lesnar. And they're supposed to be the good guys. They're supposed to be the good guys. It should have been the other way around. The heels should supposed to be afraid of the faces, not the faces be afraid of the heels. It's reverse psychology there.
Yeah. I could see a heel doing that to a face, trying to goad them into let us know when you're going to cash it in, but not faces to a heel, Mike.
No, yeah, that makes sense. you know, it doesn't make sense, and that's the thing. I mean, a lot of stuff they do with Brock Lesnar doesn't make sense. So it's par for the course here.
It really is a little bit out of the realm of logic. And that's what makes it poor to me. That's what makes it very poor to me. So, look, I understand they needed Kofi in the ring. Brock Lesnar leaves. They said you can blame Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins had already stormed out because he wasn't putting up with the nonsense. And then Dolph Ziggler attacks. Beats the hell out of Kofi Kingston. Which leads to Xavier Woods running down. And more fights. But here's the thing about the Dolph Ziggler situation. I'm probably one of the only people who truly and honestly loves this. Now, here's the problem with it, though. I know, you know, and the world knows this was only done for Saudi Arabia because Kevin Owens didn't want to go and they needed a last-minute replacement for him, and they decided, let's start a really quick feud with Dolph Ziggler, who's doing nothing and is willing to go. It's not going to last past Saudi Arabia, most likely. And it's done strictly for Super Showdown. But having said that, this may be one of the most logical things the WWE has ever done. And I love the way they're pulling it off. Not just Ziggler attacking him every week. But I thought Ziggler did a beautiful job on the microphone saying, Kofi, you're a great champion. In my opinion, maybe one of the best champions ever. And you do deserve it. And you have been here forever busting your ass to get to the top. But so have I. And I've never been able to get back to that level again. And this should be me. The fans should be going crazy over me. I should be sitting atop right now. I should have found a way to rejuvenate my career and get my career back onto that. You were pretty much in the same boat I was, being used in the undercard or a tag team. You found a way out of it, and it should have been me. And while I don't have anything personally against you, I want that spot. And you're the way I'm going to be able to achieve it. That makes perfect sense. That's probably the most perfect sense a feud has ever made in the WWE in years. Dolph Ziggler, frustrated with his own career, keeps disappearing from the WWE because he can't seem to get a really good run together. Former champion, can't seem to get it together. Has to watch Kofi Kingston, who was basically in the same boat as him, being used as a preliminary guy for a while and then a tag team guy, and not really thought of as world championship material, get a chance, win it, and achieve the fans' adulation and all the things he wanted. And he has to come back as the guy who couldn't do that and look at him and realize, everything I wanted to do, you did. Everything I wanted to achieve, you got. And the only way I can get it back now is to beat you. That's a beautiful feud, because that makes sense. And when you add to the element that Dolph Ziggler is saying, I don't hate Kofi Kingston. I like Kofi Kingston. I don't think Kofi Kingston's a horrible champion. I think he's a great champion. But at the end of the day, that should have been my spot. I earned it just as much or more than Kofi. Mike, I just think that's a very logical and a great, idea.
Sometimes they flat out luck in the thing. They flat out stumbled into this. Like you said, this is a great idea, and it probably should have been pulled off earlier than this with Dolph Ziggler, but I'm guessing they didn't have anybody else they could have put in a Kofi Kingston spot right there. Because remember, Kofi Kingston's spot was supposed to be Ali. So when Ali got hurt, you know, it became Kofi Kingston, and this became what we got. So like I said, they flat out lucked into this.
They did. They absolutely did. And maybe they'll luck into this too. I don't know. maybe the Dolph Ziggler thing will go on a little while. But one thing I do know, this feels more realistic. Now, here's what doesn't feel realistic. Raw's been on an hour. We still haven't had a match. It's one thing to let Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston fight it out. They're going to be fighting at Super Showdown and everything. But when Xavier Woods comes down and they're brawling all over the place, they're disrupting your show. I presume you had matches planned. If there was logic, you would say these guys are taking time that the matches would have been taking. Somebody's got to go down and break these guys up. Security should have been there within a minute or two to break those guys up and say, you know, listen, they can't brawl all over the arena. This isn't a scheduled match. We got matches scheduled, and these guys are, you know, brawling all over the place. Then it would have felt real. To let them not only continue to fight in a non-scheduled match all over the arena, but to commentate it, Todd, was almost laughable.
Oh, you're absolutely right here. Like you said, it's an unscheduled match right there with Kofi Kingston and Dolph Ziggler, and fighting through the crowd is like, it's unacceptable there.
It makes no sense. That's the thing. It just doesn't make any sense, Mike. I mean, okay, you've got your Raw show planned, and Xavier Woods comes down to rescue Kofi Kingston, and there's a 10-minute brawl between him, 15-minute brawl even, between him and Xavier Woods, where the announcers are actually commentating it. It's unscheduled. They're just brawling. Wouldn't you imagine that security would come out and separate them so they could get on with the show?
How you would imagine. I mean, throughout the history of wrestling, that's what would have happened. You know, you wouldn't let somebody come in there and basically, disrupt your show. Never, it never happened in the Attitude Era, even with all the craziness, and it never happened in WCW, and never with all the craziness that happened in ECW, it never happened in ECW. So
it would have had a much more realistic feel if they broke it up, Mike, and said, wow, those guys are really out of control. To call it as if it was a match made it really illogical and dumb, unfortunately. And it's too bad because, I mean, they were doing a good job. But anyway, that's how Raw starts out. After an hour, we finally get a match. And guess who the match is? Shane McMahon against Lance Noi, which is, I guess, Roman Reigns' cousin or something. And Shane cuts a decent heel promo, saying it's always been about the McMahon family and the Samoans and, the dynasty there. And there's a lot of disrespect and there's a lot of hard feelings. There's a lot of this and there's a lot of that. And so tonight he's going to beat up one of the family members. Well, here's the thing that doesn't work. It's a heel move to have Drew McIntyre attack him at the beginning, no question. And it's a move that saves Lance a little bit because, my God, if he can't handle Shane McMahon, you know, what's he doing on Raw, right? But here's where it gets to be a little weird. After Drew McIntyre beats him down, Shane beats the hell out of him. Then they both beat the hell out of him. And after like 5 minutes of both beating the hell out of him, Roman Reigns runs down to make the save. I'm like, well, where the frig were you? You're a little late to the party. This guy's already been humiliated and beaten up and tossed around. You would think if your cousin was having a match against the guy that you despise, you'd have your eyes on the match, no? You'd say, well, they're going to pull something here. Let me make sure my flesh and blood doesn't get mistreated. Nah, Reigns is like, oh, well, you know, whatever. You're beating him up for 5 minutes. Maybe I'll come down, make the save. That's why fans didn't react. People were saying, well, you know, the save got no pop. Well, the save got no pop because A, it was way too late. And B, it was very cartoonish. It's very cartoonish. You know, it's like Batman running in at the last second to save the, citizens of Gotham City from whatever. It would have been a hell of a lot better if Roman Reigns instantly came down. Maybe okay the Drew McIntyre thing, because Roman Reigns says, well, I still think my cousin can handle Shane. But as soon as that became obvious that it was going to be a two-on-one beatdown, where the hell was Roman Reigns, Mike? He waited way. They made him wait way, way, way too long to make the save.
It was almost like they're trying to flip him heel. You know, think about it. Why would a face? Why would your top face is? And that's what they want him to be, is their top face. Wait that long to come out and save a part of his family. Now, I didn't know this guy was a part of his family until they said it, you know, so I just thought it was just another guy. I mean, it would, for me, it would have been better if it was somebody like a Sean Maluta, who I know, who you know from 205 Live, who you would even bought that, because Sean Maluta is what, 200 pounds soaking wet, and Shane McMahon is 240 pounds, and what you call it is damn near 300 pounds. And you having those two guys beat up on a 200 pound man. You know, this guy who's supposed to be his cousin is what? Looks like he's about 240, 250 pounds, right?
Yeah, I don't know how heavy he is. He doesn't look like he's in the greatest shape in the world. He looks a little pudgy, but he's probably 225, 230. I don't know how tall he is, but certainly this was not a great way to introduce him. And again, this is the first match, fans. It's one thing if you're home. You know, if you're sitting here watching Raw at home, you can get up and go to the bathroom. You can go pop some popcorn. You can flick the channel for a minute. If you're sitting in that arena and you're like, Raw has started. An hour into Raw, we still haven't had match number one. That's brutal, man. And then this is the match, by the way. That's brutal. So, look, without going through all the matches, we get the premise of the show is, will Brock Lesnar really decide who he's going to cash in on tonight? That's premise number one. Premise number two is that we got a four-way to decide who's going to face Seth Rollins at Super Showdown. Will it be Baron Corbin? Will it be Bobby Lashley? The Miz? I mean, The Miz, whoo, man, I mean, or Braun Strowman. And The Miz is just being really, 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 really misused. I mean, wow. If you're The Miz, yeah, I'm sure you wish you'd stayed where you were. Because it ain't working out at all for you. Now, you got to figure, when this is announced, well, Braun Strowman's already scheduled to fight Bobby Lashley at Super Showdown, so I have no idea why they're trying to change that now. So they're not going to change it. They've already advertised it. They've already put it on the poster. So Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley aren't winning. The Miz isn't going to win, because that's the wrong place for The Miz. The Miz versus Seth Rollins. No, they don't want to do that. The Miz has just turned face. They don't want to do that. So you know Baron Corbin's winning. You know Baron Corbin is winning. That's your main event, really, and you know Baron Corbin's winning. So now the fans in the arena, if they can figure this out, are just sitting there saying there's no match in the first hour. A couple of lousy matches following. The main event is a no-brainer. We already know what's going to happen. That doesn't bode that well for the show, Todd. It really doesn't.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said about the Miz getting mistreated and everything, and I think they should have left it alone and move on with the feud to somebody else, but keep it with Shane McMahon?
Yeah, I know. I don't know what that's all about. I really don't. In the meantime, the Usos are having some kind of a block party. That's ridiculous. The Revival's in there, and they're kind of being friendly and friendly competition. I don't know where any of that's going. R-Truth is running around. He's trying to save his 24/7 belt, which is just... I wish you'd heard the interview with Mick Foley, where Mick Foley had basically admitted that this is not good. He did a radio show interview, and he basically said, look, you know, I was in a rough spot introducing that belt. I understood everybody was out there hoping that it was going to be the hardcore belt. Everybody was out there hoping my presence was going to be serious. And unfortunately, I sort of made it feel like it was going to be serious. And then I introduced something that's really a comedy belt. And that's why the fans booed. And that's why the fans don't care. And yeah, it's not the greatest idea in the world, but you know, what are you going to do? Well, that's exactly right. What are you going to do? It disrupted a couple of the matches. It's more of a disruption than anything else. Still in all, Raw wasn't horrible. I mean, the matches, for the most part, were well fought. We had Cesaro versus Ricochet in a rematch. But once again, if you know anything about the WWE, you know their booking. And their booking went as follows. Ricochet is injured the night after a pay-per-view. Cesaro takes advantage and calls him out and beats Ricochet. Ricochet heals up completely in 1 week and now wants to re-challenge Cesaro. Well, guess who's winning? 50-50 booking again. And it just doesn't do anything for either person. It just puts them on a treadmill. That's what it feels like is happening to all of the WWE performers who could be bigger stars. They're on a treadmill. Win 1 week, lose another week. Take a step forward, take two steps back. They're going nowhere. No one's going anywhere. Everyone is just on this virtual treadmill of stay even, stay even, stay even, stay even. Nobody wants to see that. So despite the fact that it's a great match, and it was a great match, the booking of it just makes everybody stay even, Mike, so it's almost a worthless proposition.
It really does. It really is. You know, and that's the thing. Now, I did enjoy what they were doing with the thing, but with that so-called block party. But I'll say this again. They need to get Carmella away from – if they want to make something out of her, they need to get her away from – as long as he's holding the title, they need to get him away from R-Truth, her away from R-Truth, you know.
Yeah, because it's ridiculous, and well, maybe they will now. We know what happened on SmackDown. We're not going to discuss SmackDown today. We'll do it tomorrow, but yeah. Look, the bottom line is it doesn't feel like there's any forward momentum for anyone except a very, very, very chosen few WWE performers. And that's where we're running into problems. The second thing we're running into as far as a problem is concerned, in my opinion, maybe it's a happy problem for the WWE, is that I think Kofi Kingston is getting over more as a champion than Seth Rollins. And by that, I mean Seth Rollins comes across different than Kofi Kingston. He's better on the mic. Kofi did not a great job this week and, you know, stumbled over a lot of his words, repeated a lot of stuff 2 or 3 times. He's not great on the microphone when he's by himself. But Seth Rollins is coming across kind of like the underdog that's not the underdog. He's coming across as a guy that you're almost guaranteeing, oh, he's going to win. Seth is going to win. Seth's not going to lose. Seth will win this one. Seth will win that one. And the bottom line of the situation is Kofi's coming across as, oh, man, Kofi's in over his head. Oh, man, I don't know if Kofi can beat. And the feel of his determination to really be a good champion and know this is his shot to do it, and if he loses quickly or he drops against his first major competitor, he's not going to be that, kind of has the fans really rooting for him, which is a really good thing. So I think Kofi's overshadow him a little bit, but let's get to the ridiculous last hour of Raw, because we were told this is going to be where things get a little raw and brutal and things get a little nasty. That consisted of giving Corey Graves a talk show called The Electric Chair. Why is it called The Electric Chair? Well, I guess it's called The Electric Chair because they built a fake electric chair in the middle of the ring that is hooked up to nothing, and the guest sits in it and has to answer questions from the audience who can ask him presumably any question they want to ask, even though we all know all of these questions were screened ahead of time. That's pretty dumb. First guest is Sami Zayn, who comes out and he's asked such great questions as, do you miss the ginger snaps? Why aren't you the champion? Wow. So he can just make fun of the questions, because that's edgy. And then he said, oh, you could ask me about my love life. You could ask me if I was a good kisser. You could have asked me about AEW. Now, this is a line that Vince McMahon signed off on. He didn't pipe bomb anybody. He didn't say it on his own. But it caused AEW chants to happen in the arena, and it caused a lot of people to search down AEW that didn't know what he was talking about. It's really not a smart response. It's really not. Now, I know the WWE wanted to fire back a little bit because Cody Rhodes and company decided that it was in their best interest to make fun of the WWE for the past 2 weeks and even do so on their show on Double or Nothing by having Cody come out and smash the throne, a similar throne to what Triple H sat on with a sledgehammer. We get all that. But that shows AEW's immaturity to how to handle this. And the WWE know better. And the WWE should have just let that slide. But instead, they had to mention it and say, see, we're not afraid to mention it. Well, if you're not afraid to mention it, you got Sami Zayn sitting there. Sami Zayn should have been flat out the question then. Let a fan ask the question. Plant a fan to ask the question. What do you think of AEW? And Sami Zayn's response should have been very negative. Even if he doesn't believe it, he's playing the character. Sami Zayn can have all the friends he wants there, but Sami Zayn's job is in the WWE. So the Sami Zayn character should have said some very negative things about them, if that's the way he wanted to run it. But no, he just has to mention the name. I think that's a poor move. I think they either should have just let it go completely or had Sami Zayn be critical of it.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's this electric chair thing is like, to me, it's stupid to have electric chair thing in the ring. And for that new excitement, what Corey Graves is doing, I just didn't care for that electric chair. And it's just stupid for me to see that.
It's not that edgy. I mean, I don't know what part of that screams edgy, you know, attitude here, Mike.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, it's making it. I guarantee you, Rowdy Roddy Piper is turning over in his grave watching this crap. You know. I mean, what must they be thinking? This is lessening all those Piper's pits. This is even lessening the Miz TV segments that they do. I mean, I wouldn't have minded him being on Miz TV doing this stuff, you know, because we would have bought that because it's the Miz, and the Miz has that type of edge to him. That yeah, he's a face, but you know. He has that type of edge that would have asked that question, that would have asked some of those questions, and there you go, you know. I mean, yeah, I know they want to do something with Corey Graves, but this is not it. That should have been the Miz.
Oh, boy, is this not it. I mean, the electric chair. Okay, then. That's edgy. And then we have, of course, the feature match. That was no edgier than any other match. Basically, again, what the WWE did is they lied to their audience again. First, the WWE comes out and says, we know we've put on some lousy shows. From now on, you're the boss, you're the authority. And then they go right back to authority angles. And right back to telling you should eat what we give you. Lied to the audience. Then they have Mick Foley, the poor bastard, come out and say, we're going to get a lot edgier this last hour. You're going to see a big difference in the last hour of Raw. We get nothing different. So we're lied to again. People get sick of it. AEW has got great athletes. There's no question. And they put on great matches because they don't have to worry about being sports entertainment. They're just pro wrestling. And here's the difference. They don't have to worry right now about all kinds of sponsors and fan children-friendly programming and all. They don't have to worry about any of that. WWE does. So they can concentrate on being pro wrestling while the WWE has to be quote-unquote sports entertainment. But if the WWE wouldn't constantly give the middle finger to their fans, fans wouldn't be so quick to betray them. You know, because it's possible to like both. It's possible to say, hey, I love AEW, but I'm not deserting the WWE over it. Or, hey, I'm not a big AEW fan, but I'll certainly check them out. But no. The WWE is almost making this like, you know, Republican and Democrat. You can't possibly, if you like one, you can't possibly like the other. Why? Why does this have to be like this? Well, because you're constantly lying to your audience. That's why. So the audience feels betrayed and says, screw you. If you have no loyalty to us, we have none to you. You've lied to us two or three times here about what we're going to get. So I don't know. And, you know, some people brought up, it's not a great aesthetic to set Sami Zayn, who can't go to Saudi Arabia because he's you know, of his heritage, and put him in an electric chair in a country that just got finished murdering a reporter. Again, who clears these ideas and says, yeah, that's cool. That'll work. Didn't anybody bring up that? Does that look a little weird to you? Does it look a little weird to you that Sami Zayn's sitting in an electric chair a week before we go to Saudi Arabia and they're having problems with the Muslims and does that look weird? Maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe Sammy shouldn't be the first guest. Nope. Don't look weird to us. Okay, well, whatever. In the midst of times, we're also facing a fatal four-way where we know Baron Corbin is going to win. Does anyone want to see Baron Corbin and Seth Rollins? And does anyone think, Is it possible, remotely possible, that Brock Lesnar is going to cash in down there? Yes, it's remotely possible. Because you know Brock Lesnar's going. You know the Saudis want Brock Lesnar. That's one big name. So, yeah, we might get a cash in, and then it would be Baron Corbin's fault. And the way the WWE is treating Baron Corbin, that's what they want. They want, like, everything in the world blamed on Baron Corbin. And he still can't get over. The only way you're going to get Baron Corbin over, folks, and listen up, is to make everything in the world his fault. Give him these opportunities, and then he either doesn't come through or whatever, and then have the powers that be, the McMahon, whoever or whatever, throw him to the curb. Get rid of him for maybe 2 months. Give him a quick 2-month vacation. And when he comes back, he's got to come back a face. He's got to come back a guy who's totally, let him grow his hair back out, get the leather jacket back on, come back in and say, you know, last time I was here, I let myself get talked into all kinds of ridiculous things and be a puppet and a stooge for people. And that's done. And maybe then a short stint as a face would rehab him somewhat, because right now he is useless as a barbed wire bathtub. He could beat anybody in the Federation, and it's, fans don't care. So, unfortunately, Mike, the main event was, I mean, not much of a main event.
It really wasn't, and that's the thing. And what can you say about that? I mean, now, you're right about Baron Corbin. He's one of these guys that's in dire need of that 2-month vacation, you know. And like you said, if you give him that 2-month vacation and say, go off and do whatever you got to do, you know, maybe get in shape, I don't know, whatever, and and maybe grow your hair out, whatever, and then we'll see what we can do for you. You know, that's it. That's what he needs, and that's the deal. Now, as far as the main event, yeah, they're getting to the point of where WCW was late in their thing, where I mean they were baiting and switching almost on a show by show basis, you know.
Yes, absolutely. And this is where, again, that's exactly why fans are mad. The majority of fans I talk to, that's why they're mad. I mean, some fans say, oh, the booking is terrible. My favorite guys aren't winning. They're not doing anything with them. They're not doing this. They're not doing that. Okay. But there's an awful lot of the fans who say, look, we're just being lied to constantly. This is going to change, and then it doesn't change. We're going to see this, and then we don't see it. And we're tired of it. That's got to stop. That's absolutely got to stop here in the WWE. There is nothing wrong with bringing back an edgier product this last hour, but then it's got to be edgy. It can't just be business as usual and the announcer's trying to convince you it's edgier when we all know it's not. It's ridiculous. Speaking of, we got another installment of the Firefly Funhouse, and I'm telling you, folks, they're going to do it again. They're going to destroy Bray Wyatt again. They can't stop themselves. It's like a moth into a flame. They cannot stop themselves from going too far. They've got all excited and giddy like a schoolgirl at the dance night because the Firefly Funhouse went over. And everybody's saying, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, did you hear all the good things people are saying about the Firefly Funhouse? Keep it running. Keep it running. Wrong. You're running it into the ground now. There's no more reason to continue this. The reveal happened. As soon as the reveal happened, it's done. If you want to present it in a different form, such as Bray Wyatt wrestles and once in a while he has a Firefly Funhouse where he invites a guest in that set to talk to or whatever, fine. Or he has something to say from that set, fine. But to have it keep going without him debuting after the reveal, you're spoiling it. I'm telling you, you're spoiling it. People are starting to go, oh God, here it is again. More blah, 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 and no action. That's what killed Bray Wyatt before. All talk, no substance. And here we are again. All talk, no substance. You better get him in here. No more of them. Now, what they did try to do this week, I guess, that it has me a little confused, is the way I had thought this whole situation with Bray Wyatt and Sister Abigail went was that Sister Abigail somehow won't let Bray Wyatt be. He has some obligation to her. He has some whatever to her, and she's tortures his mind with things, and everything he does for her. Now, this week, we're seeing something where she's saying, why won't you let me rest? Indicating he won't let her be. He won't let her rest in peace. Totally different shift of the characters now. And he's given the creature, I guess, or whatever he's supposed to be when he puts on the mask, a name, which is the Fiend. I don't know whether he's going to wrestle in the mask. No one knows anything, but I do know this. If you continue this Firefly Funhouse for week after week after week, still, you're going to kill the Bray Wyatt character. I'm telling you, you're going to do it again. This should have already wrapped up. He already should have made his debut. Truthfully, I don't know if you guys know how he's going to make his debut. I think that's the problem. I think you're back there going, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? Did he come out in a sweater vest? Did he come out in the mask? How do we do this? What's he going to act like? How are we going to... You should have had all that worked out. Hell, you should have his first opponents worked out and his second opponents worked out and his first major feud worked out. You should have all that worked out. Every bit of it should be worked out by now. Todd, if they continue to just keep shooting these Firefly Funhouses without Bray Wyatt getting in the ring, I know for sure that fans are going to say this is the same old Bray Wyatt. All we hear is talk and we never see any results.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I remember when I first seen the first Bray Wyatt Firefly Funhouse, whatever you call it. I was like, I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, is it? Congratulations, WWE, you just buried Bray Wyatt to the ground officially. And by the looks of it, they are. I got that feeling. If they don't straighten this out with this Firefly Funhouse thing, they're gonna end up really burying him, and that would be it.
Yeah, Mike. Bray Wyatt doesn't have any more chances.
Right, he doesn't have any more chances. It's almost to the point of him saying, "Look, you're gonna screw me again. I'm done. I'm gone. You know, let me go. You know, if I go to AEW, if I go to Impact, I go to Impact, whatever. Just don't screw me again." And that's they're on the way to screwing him again. And look, we compared it when they first started doing these things. We kind of compared it to a warped version of Pee Wee's Playhouse. But the difference is Pee Wee's Playhouse had more characters, more human characters. Yeah, they had their, you know, the screen, the magic screen and the genie and the this and the that, and had a couple of puppets as characters. But they had other characters that would come in and out of that fun house, you know. And the fact of the matter is, that's what they should be doing if they're going to keep doing these things. Add characters or have people come in or whatever. I don't know. I mean, and like you said, who is going to be his first feud? Now, again, if it were me, it would probably be Daniel Bryan or even Big Man there, Rowan. But that's me.
Yeah, and being they're given a tag team, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, you'd think Randy Orton, but Randy Orton is a heel. I don't know what they even want to do with Bray Wyatt. I'm assuming he's a heel. Be a very unusual face character, that's for sure. So I don't know why they would do that either. What I do know is he better be very successful, because, again, if Bray Wyatt comes out, has a match or two, and then starts dropping matches, he's done. He's done. There's nothing left for Bray Wyatt. This is your last chance for Bray Wyatt. I mean it sincerely. This is it. In the WWE, this is their last chance. So far, so good. You've stretched it a little too long. So far, so good. But now he's got to win. He's got to back up some of the things he's saying. He's got to be a force to be reckoned with. And if he's anything less than that, it's not going to work. And then you're just going to get left with whatever. Now, on the other side of the coin, and I said we weren't going to talk about SmackDown, but I want to compare this. You're doing a very similar thing with Aleister Black that you used to do with Bray Wyatt, where he just sits and talks about weird things. And he's not doing anything. And he's beginning to sound a lot like a heel. So I'm thinking they might be flipping Aleister Black heel, which is what I said they should have done to begin with. But you can't let him just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk either. Now, you can add Aleister Black to the list of people who's not going to Saudi Arabia. And a lot of people said, well, you know, that's great. He's exercising his right to protest. No, that's not what happened. I guess some of his tattoos have religious meaning that could be construed as offensive to the Saudi government. So safety first, they told him to stay home. This is really snowballing into idiocracy. It really is. It's snowballing into idiocracy. Can someone please tell me the following thing? How is a country that thinks it's okay to lure a reporter into an embassy and apparently dissect him alive and put his remains in a bag and walk out with it? How are they offended by tattoos? Can you give me a break here? If the WWEs have such smart attorneys, such great legal representation, then here's a newsflash. If the WWE wanted to get out of this contract, it's just as easy as saying, well, you've voided the terms of the contract. I mean, you ask us to come here and then you say, I can't bring this person. I can't bring that person. I can't do this. I can't show that, we're not going to fundamentally change our product for you. You bargain for our product. We did agree to leave the women home, but we did not agree to leave people with tattoos. We did not agree to leave people of Muslim descent. We did not agree to make sure nobody's gay. We did not agree to make sure nobody has ever in their lifetime associated with someone who was. You've just voided the contract. They can get out of this contract if they want. The simple fact is they don't want, because look how much money they're making. And I know a lot of people said, well, there hasn't even been a really good show in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, you know why? Because nobody's happy to be there. None of the wrestlers. It's not just one or two. None of them want to go. That's why. So they get down there like, whatever. Get me home. That's not great for your mindset to go out and put on a great, great, great match. Nobody wants to do it. And that's why I said you got to make the wrestlers happy first. That's what AEW is trying to do. I got into a large discussion with a guy who thinks I'm crazy for saying that AEW can't get political. But you can't. You can't bring up certain things. Because fans don't need to know it. I don't need to know a wrestler's politics. Why do I need to know that? Unless it's part of his character. Daniel Bryan brings it up because it's part of his character. To Daniel Bryan's everlasting credit, Daniel Bryan, from everything I've read, is a very liberal-minded guy. Some of the things that he talks about on television, he truly and honestly believes, but he takes it to an extreme, and he understands that it's annoying to a lot of people, and he can use it as a way to get over as a heel. Congratulations. That's a great way to use it. But if Daniel Bryan was tweeting every 5 minutes, here's who I think you should vote for. Here's a retweet from my favorite politician. Here's what I think about this policy. Here's what I think about that. We don't need to know that. We don't need to know the terms and conditions of every single contract that's signed. We don't need to know that you're the ultimate in fair play and we're going to sign equal amounts of this type of person and that type of person and this woman and that. We don't need to know any of this. All we need is a good product in the ring. When you start putting your everyday business practices in the nose of fans in order to try to, I guess, get them on your side, you're missing the point. This is pro wrestling. I never in my lifetime knew who Bruiser Brody voted for, and I don't care. I don't care who Stone Cold Steve Austin voted for. I don't care who Hulk Hogan voted for. I don't care. I don't know what their contract said. I don't care. The only thing a fan should maybe care about contract-wise is when does it expire. Aside from that, don't give us your everyday business dealings. We don't care. Why should we care? It's none of our business. I don't know when fans start thinking this is all your business. Oh, we want to support a federation who promises equality and justice. Well, I got news for you. Not everybody's getting paid the same. Chris Jericho is getting paid how much? Go ask if everybody's getting paid what Chris Jericho is getting paid. Go ask if there's a woman making what Chris Jericho makes. Guess what the answer is? No. So this is why I'm saying leave politics out of it. And the WWE now is dragging the same shit in. Because when they go to Saudi Arabia, then it always ends up being about politics. And you're like, oh, should they do this? Or how come they can't do that? How come poor Sami Zayn has to stay home? How come Aleister Black's not going? It's always a political discussion. And that's a mistake. It takes away from the overall ability to separate or your disbelief that there's a fight going on between two people. We're losing that as wrestling fans. We're losing that ability to say, wait a minute, at the end of the day, is this not supposed to be a fight between people and not an exhibition of who can flip the farthest or who can get the most torque on a move or, you know, come on, folks. It's supposed to be a fight. And we're dragging everything in the world into it. And that hurts the WWE just as much as it hurts AEW, especially when It's time to go to Saudi Arabia, and that's all anybody wants to talk about is the politics behind it. Who's staying home? Why are they staying home? Are they being forced to stay home? Is it just they want to stay home because they don't their politics makes them think they shouldn't be there? It's just too much for fans. We don't need to know all this. No one needs to know how the hot dog is made, or you wouldn't eat the fucking hot dog. All you know is the hot dog tastes good. Nobody says, by the way, before you eat that hot dog, we're going to drag you into the factory and show you how that hot dog's made, what it's made out of, the people who made it, the animals it came from. Nobody does that. So why are we doing it with wrestling, Mike?
Right. And the last time a movie did that, kind of went that way, was the original Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, because that was the whole premise of these guys. Charlie gets the golden ticket and he goes to the chocolate factory, and well, that was sort of a dark-ish movie, but it was made for kids, you know. But that's the general premise of that movie at the, you know. So I mean, again, what are you doing? We don't need to know. Well, we got this contract here, and we got to do this, and we got to do that. I mean, yeah, you're right about Daniel Bryan, but Daniel Bryan is much the same thing that was happening with Dutch Mantel and what's
Jack
his
Swagger.
Name? He was there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a fair comparison. It's exactly what was happening. They were taking a more conservative view and making it annoying. Saying, how do you sneak in my country? You don't belong in my country. They were taking a very extreme view and selling it as an over-the-top heel. That's what they're doing with Daniel Bryan. So they did it equally. They did it with a conservative side and a liberal side. That's fine. If it's a part of your character, it's fine. But here's what we don't need. We don't need Sami Zayn. I'm not saying he did it, but I'm just giving an example. We don't need Sami Zayn tweeting, due to the fact that I have Muslim descent, I am not allowed to go to Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Arabian government is oppressive and horrible people, and the WWE should have no dealings with them. I'm forced to stay home. Gays are forced to stay home. Women are forced to stay home. And yet this company gladly takes their money, and then they give the orders of who they want, and we dance like puppets, and I want no part of it anyway. And my good friend Kevin Owens also agrees with me. We don't need to know this. We do not need to know this. It does not help us to suspend our disbelief in who you are. The great mistake that all professional, not all, but a lot of professional wrestlers are making these days is to say, we no longer have to convince you we really are that character. You know we're not, and we're not going to try. That's a mistake. That's why Brock Lesnar is so successful. Because he has everyone convinced, that he is an antisocial, does not like people, does not respect wrestling, does not respect anyone in wrestling, shows up only for the money when he wants to show up, makes a joke out of the sport, and couldn't care less about any fans. That's what they want you to believe about Brock Lesnar. Truth of the matter is, he was a professional wrestler long before he was a UFC fighter. So he must have some respect. He's good friends with The Undertaker and Stone Cold and several other people, so he certainly respects what they do. So you're bluffed to a certain extent because Brock Lesnar doesn't let you see behind that veil. Brock Lesnar doesn't tweet, I totally disagree with this policy, and I do. He doesn't do that. You see Brock Lesnar, and all you see is, I guess that's the real guy. The guy we're seeing that really is Brock Lesnar. He doesn't let you peek behind the mask. And for that, he's actually good at what he does. He doesn't put on very good matches anymore. But keeping up that persona, he's great at that. Fantastic at it. And that's why fans are genuinely hate him. They genuinely, our fans genuinely say Brock Lesnar has zero respect for professional wrestling or anybody in it. That's simply not true. Yes, it is true that he's not going to lay down for just anybody, and he doesn't like certain people, and he's certainly not going to put certain people over. He's not going to give anything back to the sport. But to say he has no respect for anybody, he certainly does. Certainly does. Or he wouldn't even show up. So you're being marked out to a certain extent by Brock Lesnar, but nobody else has given you the ability to do that. Because they instantly take to their private Twitters and their private Instagrams and show you, I'm not that guy. How would you feel if Daniel Bryan took to Twitter tomorrow and said, well, I think that global warming's a joke, really. I mean, everybody knows it's just a bluff. They say, you know, all the scientists are in agreement. That's not true. Just climate change isn't global warming. It's a totally different thing. And I eat plenty of meat. I'm not a vegan. If we weren't born to eat meat, why do we have, canine teeth? You'd say, oh, wait a minute. Then I can't believe he's that character now. See, that's the problem. We need, as fans, to be able to allow ourselves to be more bluffed out and marked out, and not less. We take it as a sign of weakness. People get marked out and they get mad. Oh, I don't want to be marked out. I do. I want to be marked out constantly. That's why I watch wrestling. I want to be marked out constantly. I don't like the term mark, but I want to be bluffed constantly. I want to be able to say, I really don't like Kevin Owens. I don't think he's a nice guy. I don't think he's a nice man. I don't think he's someone who I would like in real life. That's what I want. And every time Kevin Owens does something to show, oh, no, I'm a really cool guy. Here I am on stage with Shania Twain. Here I am at a comic convention. Here I am, you know, yucking it up at whatever. Mistake. Mistake. Just let it be. Give us the ability as fans to buy into who you are. Don't destroy it right away. Don't show us how the hot dog is made, please. And that's why a lot of these people in the WWE, they're just not getting over. We don't take Baron Corbin seriously. We don't take Bobby Lashley seriously. We're not even taking Drew McIntyre seriously anymore. And Drew McIntyre used to be really good at it. There was a time, maybe 2 months ago, when I was getting really annoyed with Drew McIntyre's character. And I was saying, okay, it's time to put him in here against somebody good and, you know, let's see what happens. But no. Nope. You won't let us even have that. So how are we supposed to take things seriously? Then you introduce a character like Sami Zayn who basically says, oh, well, the fans all suck. Wrestling sucks. I don't want a belt. No, why are you wrestling? So you said, I don't want a belt. I don't really even want to compete. I'd love to be anywhere but here. But here I am. Okay, well, that's not very good. That doesn't sound like what an athlete would do. So we can't believe your character. It's just getting too hard for fans because they want too much information, and they if they don't get it, they get mad, and when they get marked out, they get mad. Rather than to enjoy it. You know, when you go to a magic show and you don't know how the trick is done, usually you laugh and say, wow, that was pretty cool. I have no idea how they did that. That's awesome. Wrestling fans' mentality is, oh, I don't know if that's real or not. Fuck them. What? Just relax. But the wrestlers are doing it too. No matter where you go, you see wrestlers, oh, well, I got merchandise to sell. So I got to be nice to the fans after the event. Got to sell my merchandise. Well, okay. Then don't expect him to take you seriously as a heel. Brock Lesnar's not in the parking lot signing autographs. He's just not. Mike, I think that's a huge part of this problem.
That's right. And And look, I'm going to go back to the I don't know, call him Dutch Mantel, but you know who I'm talking about. Thing, he did such a good job of bluffing at the time that he bluffed Glenn Beck, who's not a wrestling fan, who's not even a sports fan, who is not a wrestling fan, and we praised him for it at the time. You know, there's a reason why people continue to watch the World Series of Poker on ESPN when it comes on, you know, because it's entertaining to watch these guys look at these other guys, you know, the yap at them or whatever, but we know what's happening, and they're trying to bluff their way. At times, they're trying to bluff their way into winning a big pot. It's entertainment. I mean, that's been a part of – that should be a part of – if you're sports entertainment, the bluff should be a part of your bag of tricks every time, you know, all the time.
Agreed. Agreed. Wrestlers have almost an obligation to give the fans the ultimate experience that they can. And part of that ultimate experience, I'm not saying you have to be rude to people if you're a bad guy. Depends on what kind of a bad guy you are. I mean, if The Miz is a bad guy, I could see him signing autographs because it's good for his ego. You know what I mean? I'm an A-lister. Of course they want my autograph. I got that. Lars Sullivan shouldn't be signing autographs. It's not his character. So you have to take that into consideration. But I'm sorry. You cannot expect people to boo the hell out of Kevin Owens, no matter what he does. If he's on stage dancing with Shania Twain, at comic conventions, yucking it up with Van, you cannot expect it. And he has to understand that too. And for that reason, there's a difference between saying, look, I'm going to be nice to this guy and say, I'm glad you're a fan and everything, blah, blah, blah. No, do not put this on Instagram. No, I'm not putting it on my social media page. No, you can't shoot a video of me and, you know, singing happy birthday to your friend because that'll hurt my image. I will tell you a very quick story. Scott Levy, who played Raven. I knew him a little bit. I got to know him a little bit. And we did a couple of things together where we had him come do some autograph signings at a local business that I sponsored. And, you know, at one point I even had his home phone number. And I remember at Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, I was going to try to talk to him about a business arrangement we were going to do. He came out and literally walked right by me like I did not exist. As a matter of fact, he put his hand on my shoulder and kind of pushed me out of the way. And at first I was like, fuck him. I'm trying to give him some business here. What's his problem? He then sends a mutual friend over to where I am to say, don't take that personally, but there's other fans there. And I cannot stop and talk to you about business stuff as my character while there's other fans floating around there. Give me a call later and we'll talk. And I thought to myself, gotcha. Now I get it. He sees other fans out there and says, if I stop and start talking to this guy normally, oh, yeah, when do you want to do this autograph signing? Yeah, okay, yeah, last time was cool. I could, you know, we could do this. There goes his character. Because Raven, the character, wouldn't do that. And to his credit, while he was accessible to fans during the autograph signing, he wasn't overly friendly. He drugged Stevie along for the specific purpose of, he said, Stevie can be friendly. Stevie can be the guy that says, oh, hey, you know, and be nice to the fans while I'm just kind of moody and, okay, I allow you to take my picture. Okay, I will put my name down. That is taking the business seriously. And, Mike, that's the difference. They don't do that now.
They really don't. And, look, as I recall, Sting was the same way when he first started to do that crow gimmick, you know, because that's almost the exact same thing, exact same gimmick that Raven did, is that crow gimmick, you know. that Sting came up with. And look, you would expect that. Now let's put you in the same situation with the Miz, and you know you're gonna do this and you're gonna do that, and you're trying to talk to him. The Miz, in that character, the Miz would probably have stopped and started talking business with you because, well, that's his character. You know?
Right. Right. No, you got it exactly right. The Miz literally can say, oh, you know, here's another person who wants, I'm so popular, of course he wants me to come to do this and that. Just more proof that I'm an A-lister, more proof that people want me. I'm in demand. Yeah, of course. But it just goes to show you how wrestlers used to take it seriously. Nowadays, no one would think twice. Very few would think twice about saying, oh, they already know I'm not this way. Let me come out and chat with everybody and ask if everybody had a good time and how, you know. And it hurts in the long run. You think it doesn't. You think, oh, no, I'm being nice to the fans. I'll remember that. But at the end of the day, you're robbing the fans of what they really want, and that is somebody they can really hate. That's what fans really want. Someone who they say, I really, honestly, I don't like this guy. I don't think he's kidding. I don't think he's a nice guy. I don't think he gives a rat's ass about me. And actually, I'm afraid of him because I think he might tear my freaking head off if I even boo him. That's what's missing. I remember wrestlers telling stories where they said, if you were in like the first few rows where Stan Hansen walked out, fans wouldn't boo him. They were afraid to boo him. They'd look away. They'd try to be, you know, as inconspicuous as possible because they didn't want to catch his wrath, because they believed in their heart of hearts that Stan Hansen would reach over that rail, grab him by the neck, and haul him over it and think nothing of doing it. They believed it. That's good, because then they rooted that much harder for the people who faced him. It's extremely important that wrestling get back to those fundamentals, and we're not going to do it if we have to deal with wrestlers' personal feelings on whether we should go to Saudi Arabia, tweets about what they feel about rival company. We don't need any of this. We got to get back to allowing the wrestlers, to be able to bluff the fans, because that's part of the magic. It's as simple as that. That's part of the magic. We had in a federation that I wrestled for a guy who did a hillbilly type character. And really well. I mean, really, 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 really well. So well that people would say, you know, he was almost a comedy character in a way, and did it so well that people would say, God, that guy, he's like a complete idiot. I mean, he really is. He's not very bright at all. Because he'd keep it up. He'd keep it up even when the show was over. And people would really say, God, that guy is a yokel. My God, how do you work with that guy? That guy's just a freaking yokel. He was none of that. He was none of that at all. Joke was on them. But did I sit there and say, oh, well, you have to understand, he's playing a character. That guy's brilliant. He's, you know, smart as you or me is smarter. And he doesn't act like that normally. Those aren't his normal. I didn't say any of that. I'd just be like, yeah, well, you know, he is what he is. Because that's his shtick. That's what made him what he was. If people realized he wasn't that at all, it wouldn't be as cool. It wouldn't have been as interesting. It wouldn't have been as entertaining. Now, they might have said, wow, he's a remarkable actor. That's fantastic. But that would wear off after a month. And then you say, oh, yeah, we know he's not really like that. No, people really thinking he was like that sold that character, because it made everything he did look natural. That is good wrestling philosophy and psychology. But nobody buys into what Baron Corbin says. Nobody buys into what, you know, Drew McIntyre is saying anymore, because they make him say stuff that doesn't make any sense. And then you should say it just doesn't make sense. And if it doesn't make sense, we can't believe it. They make Seth Rollins go out and say anybody who would cash in a Money in the Bank briefcase when their opponent is at a weakened state is a coward. Well, then add yourself to the list. You did it. So by saying that, fans just go, oh, it's not believable. It's just a line that somebody wrote for him. Here we are listening to a line somebody wrote for him. It's the difference between watching Bruce Lee in a kung fu movie and saying that dude could really kick your ass, and watching, you know, Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, where you say that bullshit. None of that shit happens. You see what I'm saying? Bruce Lee could go anywhere he wanted to, and people would be like, yeah, don't mess with that guy, because he will definitely kick your ass. Whether you're big, small, whatever the frig you are, you can get your ass kicked by Bruce Lee. Nobody's getting out of Keanu Reeves' way saying, oh, he's a tough guy. That's what's ending up happening with wrestling. Everybody's a phony tough guy now because nobody buys it anymore. The fans aren't buying that anymore. So, Mike, I think that's a good comparison.
Right. It is a good comparison. Exactly what you're talking about is what made Sandow so good. They could give him whatever character they wanted to, and he got it over. He got the Mizdow thing over. He got the Macho Sandow, Mandow thing over, you know, and he also got the Savior of the Masses thing over. Anything they gave him, he got over. He understood. I mean, we've said it before. We should consider this an acting role. And I guess to some extent, that's what makes people like The Miz so good, because he kind of understands this, that this is an acting role.
I agree with you 100%, Mike. And, you know, again, what did the wrestlers do? The wrestlers all said, oh, The Miz is just an actor. But look what he's become. I would rather take an actor and make them a wrestler than a wrestler and make them an actor. That's my philosophy on it. Because an actor fundamentally understands what they have to do. They fundamentally understand, I have to get through this character. Where a wrestler thinks, I don't really need a character as long as I have enough flippy moves in my repertoire that fans will be like, that was impressive. It's not true. It's just not true. This is why Monday Night Raw is suffering. Let's look down the lineup and see who we believe. We like Becky Lynch because she's an underdog who rose to the top. She genuinely seems to be having a good time. She genuinely seems to care about her performance. She genuinely seems to care about the fans. And she genuinely seems to be one of those people who really deserve her success. But do we honestly believe that Becky Lynch is a girl that in a fight you wouldn't want to tangle with? No, I don't. And nothing she's done so far indicates that. Nothing. We're cheering for her because we like her, which is fine. But that barroom brawl, tough girl, she doesn't remind me of that at all. Not at all. Charlotte Flair is closer to real because the character she portrays, you can say, yeah, well, that's the way she grew up, and that's, yeah, I can see Charlotte being like that. So she's closer. Lacey Evans, forget it. The reason she's not going over is nobody even knows what her character is. Is she a demure Southern belle who just happens to have a wicked right hand, or is she a rich aristocratic? No one even knows what she is. Fundamentally, people like Lars Sullivan, well, that's very easy. He's just a big, monstrous brute. That's easy to play. That's an easy character to play. But when you have subtleties in your character, and people believed Stone Cold Steve Austin was a beer-drinking redneck who would fight you at any time in the world, and if you bumped into him in a bar and didn't apologize, he'd kick your ass. That's why Steve Austin went over, because you believed in your heart of hearts that is exactly who he is. And maybe part of it's true. We don't even know to this day how much of that's true. But we do know he played one of the Hollywood blondes, didn't he, who posed for the camera and was more like The Miz than Stone Cold Steve Austin. So that's what you have to begin to understand. You got to sell yourself and your character, and you can't do it if you fundamentally cannot understand the differences between yourself and that character and not express them to fans. Simple as that. Mick Foley's ultimate downfall was he became beloved and he became highly respected for all the crazy stuff he did. But when he really was Cactus Jack, he was feared, especially in Japan. People like that man is a lunatic. He is an absolutely out of his mind, out of control lunatic. Go ask the Japanese fans. People ran away from him. They thought he was crazy. And Mick Foley has said it best. And the funny thing was, in this interview, he actually referenced a card of wrestling that I was on. In, not on, I'm sorry, that I was there for. He said, we were doing a card in upstate New York. And I was a part of the match. I was fighting, I forget who he was fighting. He was managing. He was managing an independent wrestler against Jerry Lawler. And Terry Funk was on the card. And Terry Funk was going to come down and jump in the ring. And he said, I told the ring announcer, you better run. And he said, he looked at me like he was nuts. And so I was nuts and said, what are you talking about? And he said, I'm telling you, run. I see the look in Terry Funk's eyes coming down. I said, you better go, go. And he didn't. And Terry Funk hit him directly in the head. He said, you know, backstage, the guy's got ice on his head. And he's like, why did he do that? You know, what's going on? Terry Funk convinced that crowd in upstate New York that this is a crazy old man who has crashed this event. And he's not kidding. He's throwing chairs. He's yelling at the promoters who are trying to stop him. He's disrupting the match. He's saying things he shouldn't say. He's reckless. He's out of control when he's none of those things in real life. That's the beauty of Terry Funk. Fans would say, man, when he gets into that zone and he comes out there, he's out of control, man. It's not a joke. It's not whatever. That's him. No, you're being marked out. But he was great at it. Well, Mick Foley had that same thing. But then when the WWE got a hold of him and they didn't want that Cactus Jack fierce mentality and they tried to water it down and then he did Dude Love and he did all the other things, people realized this is just an act. And as hard as Mick tried to make it look like he had split personalities and whatever, fans never really bought Cactus Jack the same way again. Just like if Abdul the Butcher had changed his persona and become a ballet dancer, people would have said, well, then he never really was Abdul the Butcher. And it's a shame that wrestlers don't learn that lesson, Mike.
Right. And to your example with Mick Foley, look at what they're doing with Bailey now. They've sort of changed her thing. Her thing was that fan, I'm just a fan who made good and all this stuff. But now look at what they're doing with her. She's dressed like, she acts like, and she's using the same moves as, just about the same moves as, the Macho Man. They've changed her from being that John Cena, that female John Cena, to almost being a female Macho Man.
I agree. 100%. 100%. And again, you'd have something with Bailey. If Bailey comes across very genuine. Bailey comes across very genuine with her appreciation of, look at the success I'm getting. I love the fans. I love what I'm doing. I'm just like one of you guys. She's very genuine. I don't know how she is outside the ring, but she comes across very genuine with that. Very genuine. I think I told you guys on a previous show, the first time that Bayley made her debut in the WWE with the big wacky waving flailing arm men and the music and her coming out hugging fans and, you know, doing her little dance and everything, I was sitting with some non-wrestling fans, which I often do because I like their opinion on things. And one of them said to me, that girl's going to be big. Bet you that girl's going to be big. You can sort of tell, you know, because they feel it. They're like, oh, that she seems kind of genuine and the fans are all, everything was in place. And then they ruined her. And now they're trying to rebuild her. It's tough. Why do you think AJ Styles is so successful? Because AJ Styles just is AJ Styles. He comes across as the guy that you're listening to, that's really him. He doesn't have a tremendous personality other than I'm just a, you know, I'm a competitor. I'm trying to do my best and whatever, but he comes across as genuine. He's not great on the mic, but he comes across as what you see is what you get. I'm not playing a character. I'm not doing whatever. What you see is what you get. He may be exactly the opposite of that outside the ring. I don't know. But what I know about AJ Styles is he comes across genuine on TV. Bobby Lashley does not come across genuine on TV. Baron Corbin does not come across genuine on TV. Many people don't come across genuine on TV. And you're like, that's just them playing it up. I want more genuine. I want to be able to actually like and hate people based on what they do, Todd, and that's becoming rare.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like he said. Like, two more guys, like, Bruiser, one of them was, like, Bruiser Brody. He had that, a psychotic, hardcore instinct, like, that was the original Cactus Jack thing right there. And it was Mick Foley was like that as well, as, like, Bruiser Brody, another crazy guy.
There's so many of them. There's so many of them that we could name. So many of them. And now there's none. I mean, there used to be a ton. Used to be a ton. I always said one of the greatest performers, not wrestlers, but performers. Notice I didn't say wrestlers, was George the Animal Steel. And the reason George the Animal Steel was so great is when he was a heel, people legitimately said, there's something wrong with that man. Nobody looks like that. Nobody acts like that. Nobody could be that good of an actor. He ain't right. He's obviously looks like a primitive. His actions and the way he flails his arms and the way whatever, he's dangerous. That's a dangerous man. He probably should be in a mental institution. People really believe that. And then he became this lovable, childlike creature who Lou Albano managed that loved his little stuffed animal doll he called mine. He was able to make that transition because he understood the psychology behind wrestling. At one time, he could make you fear him. At the next time, he could make you feel sorry for him and make him a sympathetic character. That is one of the top skills you can have in professional wrestling, Mike.
Right. Why do you think, I'll put it to you this way, why do you think when we see him, we still like Heath Slater? You know, why do you think we still like him when we see him? Because we feel like he, in this gimmick that they have him in, we feel like he's genuinely that guy. We feel like that guy could be that guy with the kids, that this he's doing it. He's only in the business for his kids or, you know, to make money to support his kids. You know, that's why we continue to like Heath Slater.
Yeah, some people can get across as the character that they really are presenting themselves to be. You gotta try to stay off of the social media and ruin your character, though. I don't know why people insist on that. I just don't know why. Anyway. Raw was a very unusual show this week because some fans gave it good marks, some fans gave it bad marks. Nobody gave it in the middle marks. Everybody either said, oh my God, between Brock Lesnar dancing to an imaginary boombox and this brawl that went nowhere and no real matches and Shane McMahon dragging out one of the Hanoi family to just massacre and Roman Reigns being late to the save and a main event that we already knew what was going to happen during and this ridiculous electric chair thing, it was an F. And then there were people who said, look, they tried real hard. There was a lot of like bitter battling back and forth. And there was a lot of real good, you know, mic work by Shane McMahon. It was really, really upping the ante of being a heel. And, you know, there was a lot of good suspense about Brock Lesnar and will he cash in it in Saudi Arabia? You know, that it left us kind of wondering. So that's good. All I can tell you is this, if Brock Lesnar competed at Money in the Bank and he doesn't know he has a year, then that doesn't speak very highly of Brock Lesnar, does it? I'm to the extent that I'm saying the only good thing that happened on Raw was Dolph Ziggler, and I'm afraid that that's so short-lived that it's ridiculous. So for that reason, I'm giving it a D. I just think that most of it was illogical. Most of it was extraordinarily, extraordinarily predictable. And I just think they lost the audience halfway through. And just audiences just like, we don't care. We just don't care. And that's never a good sign. So I'm giving it a D, Mike. How about you?
I got to give it a D as well. I mean, especially with the fact that they brought back the Funhouse, that it should have been over with sooner. You know, once he showed us the mask and all. So, yeah, a D.
Yeah, I agree with that. Todd, let's go to you and see what you think.
I got to go with you guys at D.
So it's kind of unanimous this week. We all gave it a D. So we're on the side of the fans who said it was horrible. Look, folks, I don't know what to tell you. Here's what I do hope that you get out of this show if you get nothing else. You do not have to make a decision between AEW and WWE. Don't let this become a battle of AEW fans versus WWE fans. AEW sucks. No, AEW rules. You don't need to do that. You can enjoy both for what they are. Do not compare AEW to WWE. They're two different products. If you want to compare anything to AEW, compare NXT. Because that's closer. NXT doesn't have to be so politically correct, and they don't have to worry about the, you know, ins and outs of the sponsors and all that kind of stuff. They don't have to be kid-friendly necessarily. There's a lot that NXT can do that the WWE probably wouldn't do. So AEW is closer to NXT, if you want my honest opinion. You know, I've only seen AEW in two shows. I'll take NXT over AEW currently, but I want to see what the TV show brings. But I think we're comparing apples and oranges when we're comparing AEW to WWE. It's not the same beast. And it's never going to be. So enjoy them both. It's like saying you love ice cream and chocolate's your favorite flavor, but you're never, ever, ever, ever going to have vanilla, and anybody who orders vanilla is an idiot. I don't get that. Enjoy them all. Enjoy all the flavors. You're right to critique things that you don't like, but don't make it an us versus them, because when you do that, you lose the ability to enjoy both, Mike.
You really do. And look, we've said it before, if Impact was on a bigger channel and was going great, that would be your comparison to WWE, would be Impact, you know. As of right now, you're right. AEW is more comparable to NXT, and they're probably in direct competition with NXT. But, you know, they can't say that. They got to say we're in competition with WWE because – well, they wanted that big T TV deal, and they want every, and I understand they're going to have a couple of more pay-per-views before, you know, before the show comes up. So that was your big point about AEW, that, you know, they needed to have more shows to carry things forward, you know, until the TV deal kicks in. So, yeah, they're going to have some more shows.
Absolutely agreed. Absolutely agreed. Let's see what that brings. But let's not be AEW versus WWE fans, because that's silly. Anyway, folks, I know that SmackDown happened. Believe me, and we'll be back tomorrow to discuss SmackDown. There's an awful lot to discuss there. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.